Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher and a special broadcast from the Ohio State University's Chadwick Arboretum annual spring plant sale on the OSU campus. We are here until noon. The sale is here through tomorrow, so check it out. Go to our website at wosu.org/allsides for directions and more information about this fantastic sale. It's National Public Gardens Day. And this morning, we're celebrating Columbus's many public gardens and the philosophy of public gardens across the country, from the Park of Roses and Botanical Gardens to the Franklin Park Conservatory. Central Ohio is a hub for anyone who loves gardens or gardening. Joining us now is the director of the Ohio State University Chadwick Arboretum and Learning Gardens, Mary Maloney. Welcome back, Mary.
Thank you.
And also joining us is the Executive Director of the American Public Gardens Association, Dr. Casey Sklar. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ann.
Listeners, do you have a favorite Central Ohio public garden? We want to know. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And if you have time, please do come and check out the sale down on the OSU campus. It's right off Lane Avenue near Schottenstein. Check it out. Dr. Sklar, what is public garden? Sometimes people confuse it with community gardens and urban gardening and that kind of a thing. What defines a public garden these days?
So public gardens are really basically wonderful community assets, and they can include community gardens, urban green space organizations, botanical gardens, arboreta. We have some cemeteries and some zoos that have gardens established with them. Basically, they're places where people and plants come together to learn about the critical things that plants do for all of us to help us survive.
There are rules, though, about what constitutes a technically a public garden.
Yeah, they are. I mean, they're places that need to be open to the public at least, you know, 1 or 2 days a year at the very minimum. But they also have an ethic surrounding plants and the need to record the plants that they have, monitor the plants they have, and keep records on the plants that they have.
So how does Central Ohio stack up?
Really, really well.
How come?
I think it's just because there's a critical mass of different types of public gardens here that have grown over many different times. And so OSU Chadwick is a great example of that. Franklin Park Conservatory and Botanical Gardens, Inniswood Metro Gardens, the Dawes Arboretum, and even the Friends of the Topiary Park, the Columbus Topiary Park downtown is a great example.
That's a fabulous place. I imagine that at some point people just sort of take it for granted that public gardens have always been with us, but they used to be sort of the, you know, these big fancy gardens for the wealthy, for the scholarly, not for everybody.
Yeah, I mean, yesterday's botanical garden was very much the, you know, keep off the grass type of thing, and that plants were always at, you know, just outside arm's reach, and today's garden has everything, and especially focusing on children, families, but also the performing arts, visual arts, large exhibitions, and are just relevant 365 days a year, but especially today on National Public Gardens Day.
Yeah, Mary Maloney, you do so many different kinds of events Chadwick.
And I'm just thrilled that we have Casey Sklar with us on National Public Gardens Day. I'm always happy to, during this spring plant sale that raises operating funds for the Chadwick Arboretum and Learning Gardens, to celebrate National Public Gardens Day. And we've done that every year since it began, and I'm just thrilled that Casey could be here today to celebrate with us.
How many public gardens are there in the United States? Because I was trying to figure out a count, and it's not easy because there's always more popping up.
Yeah, you know, we have over 625 member gardens in the American Public Gardens Association, the USA, Canada, Mexico, and about 20 other countries. There are lots of different smaller ones that probably pop up, but we have the vast majority of them within our membership. Collectively, they welcome over 121 million visitors a year to public gardens. So their chances are within your community, one out of six people has been to one in the last year.
Mary Maloney, describe Chadwick Arboretum, what you do here. I mean, the extent of it for people who haven't visited it. And by the way, if you come down to the plant sale, it's a great time to just take some more time to go visit the garden as well. It's right across the street.
Well, that's right. We're a unique public garden in that we're on the university campus. And many university campuses around the nation do have gardens. And in fact, we're part of a consortium of arboretum public gardens around the nation who meet annually during the APGA conference. But this garden, we're 60 acres. We're in a very urban area. We're not near the Rocky Mountains. We're not near the Pacific Ocean. We're in a very urban, concentrated area. We have 60,000 undergrad students. We have 120,000 employees here. We need to provide a place of respite. We're also a research platform for the Department of Horticulture, Plant Pathology, Entomology, Landscape Architecture. So it's, and also the performing arts. We have a research lake just behind us, really, where we are now, where the plant sale site is. And we continue to grow and to continue to become more relevant on the campus. A couple of years ago, we installed a 12,000-square-foot green roof that's bringing a lot of tours and interest to a new infrastructure idea. So, you know, we continue to evolve, and certainly the spring plant sale helps support that evolution.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about public gardens today. It is National Public Gardens Day, and we couldn't spend it in a better place. We're at the Chadwick Arboretum's annual spring plant sale. There are a ton of different varieties of plants for different purposes and for different places in your garden. So stop on down down here on campus. Go to our website at wosu.org/allsides and check out the link, and it'll give you all the information you need to know to get down here. And if you want to share your idea of the best public garden in Central Ohio, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. My guests, Mary Maloney, she's director of the Ohio State University Chadwick Arboretum and Learning Gardens, and also our special guest today, Dr. Casey Sklar, he's executive director of the American Public Gardens Association. If you have a question or comment for either of them, you can give us a call as well. Why is it important to have a public garden? What's the mission of it?
You know, I always like to say that our gardens are, but are not just, pleasantly designed, beautiful places to visit. They make so many different indispensable contributions to their communities, whether it's places to go to learn more about plants and how to grow plants. Increasingly, that has to do with food and solving food insecure community relations and learning more about crop wild relatives and other things, but then also from that kind of conservation ethic on over to just places, as Mary said, you know, to go to learn and to be entertained, and places for research to further plant research. And then also they're really super strong drivers of community economic development. So a lot of your essential public garden, like OSU Chadwick, is a great example of that. I mean, it can't exist without community donations and community involvement like you experience here at the plant sale, where thousands of people purchase plants every weekend. That drives the earned revenue support for the organization, and our gardens are strongly dependent on that, but also support lots of jobs. You heard about the number of jobs that she talked about for OSU mm-hmm. Chadwick, but of course nationally, end-use horticulture, and of which public gardens is a strong part, is a $200 billion a year, 2 million job industry. And so it's something that, you know, in increasingly urban populations that make up about 85% of the U.S. population, that's the form of agriculture that they interact with every day.
Right. And, you know, Mary, I find this with OSU in general, or in the past have. I think it's changing. But here it is in the middle of this urban center, and a lot of times children and families that live right next door don't even know something like Chadwick exists. What's outreach like these days?
You know what? It's increasing and improving. And I love to host a tour where we have new visitors to the gardens who do live in a surrounding neighborhood, and they're discovering this place for the first time. I think in some respects, maybe the campus is viewed as an exclusive place. It's not. It's open to everybody. I see that it's also a big recruiting tool to bring students and future students to our campus. But it's we're free and open to the public 24/7. You know, I encourage people to come at any time of the day or night. To experience the labyrinth, to experience the research lake, to experience the green roof, to see the collections. We have brides and grooms come to get mm-hmm. their wedding photos here and to have their wedding ceremonies here. We, you know, people use it, come to the gardens when they're needing respite, when they're happy, when they're sad. It's just it's a wonderful place on this campus, and I'm grateful that our visitation is increasing.
Is that a larger mission of the American Public Gardens Association to bring more people in who might live right next door, but
absolutely
formerly haven't felt welcome for one reason or another?
You know, we're constantly trying to connect people to public gardens on behalf of our member gardens, and Mary really brought up a significant point. I mean, we educate collectively about 2.2 million kids a year and do education, but the vast majority of that is K through 5. And so there's a new effort that has been launched by many land-grant universities across the country, private industry and horticulture, and in conjunction with many associations, including ours, called Seed Your Future. And you can learn more about it at seedyourfuture.org. Or there's a mass campaign that they're running that's targeted at middle school and high school audiences, because that seems to be where we're sort of losing interest in horticulture. And that's wearebloom.org. And it's a wonderful effort on behalf of Scholastic and Fleischman Hillard and Seed Your Future to really engage middle school and high school kids in the conversation about horticulture and plant sciences as a viable career choice.
Can a public garden be any size?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we have gardens that have maybe visitors in the hundreds per year, and then I think the number one visitation at a garden last year was about 25 million people go through the National Mall and Smithsonian Gardens in every year.
Right.
And so it's a massive amount, but that interaction and that intimate contact with nature that a child can get, that can last for years and years.
You know, a benefit of membership at most public gardens, including Chadwick Arboretum and Learning Gardens, is that we have a reciprocity agreement with the American Horticulture Society that provides free or reduced admission to many of the public gardens around the nation. So by becoming a card-carrying member of Chadwick Arboretum, for example, you can have free or reduced admission. And that, you know, that kind of drives the idea of when you're traveling to visit another public garden.
Not to mention, don't you get a discount at the garden at the plant sale today?
You do. Yeah, all the Friends members get a 10% discount on Chadwick Arboretum purchases, and then we have agreements with local vendors that bring a discounted benefit through the whole year.
Uh-huh.
So
we are going to continue our conversation. It is American Public Gardens Day, and we are lucky to have the executive director of the American Public Gardens Association, Dr. Casey Sklar, with us. Also, Mary Maloney, she is executive director or director of the Ohio State University Chadwick Arboretum and Learning Gardens. We're at the annual spring plant sale today. It's a beautiful day out here. Join us. The sale goes on through tomorrow. For more information, check out the link on our website at wosu.org/allsides. And if you have a question or comment for my guests, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. This is a special broadcast from the grounds of the Ohio State University Chadwick Arboretum's annual spring plant sale, one of my favorite days of the year. For more information about the sale, go to the link on our website at wosu.org/allsides. And if you hear about us on the radio and drop by, don't forget to drop by and say hi. It's National Public Gardens Day. And this morning we're talking public gardens, something Central Ohio has no shortage of. Still with us, director of the Ohio State University Chadwick Arboretum and Learning Gardens, Mary Maloney, and also executive director of the American Public Gardens Association, Dr. Casey Sklar. Casey, I bet you probably travel somewhere new every year on this day?
Absolutely.
How big of a deal is it around the country?
It's getting to be a bigger deal. And we have over 165 gardens that are participating already this year. And really all that we ask is that they just represent in some way, shape, or form the best that public gardens have to offer. They are doing everything from fundraising that benefits children's charities to unique exhibition events to large-scale art events that are debuting today, and all the way to just different more intimate plant sales for mom and other things to help support mom.
What is the funding, I guess, paradigm for public gardens? Do people like to pay to enter a garden? How do you support these kinds of endeavors?
So our gardens are, there's about maybe 45% of gardens that have free admission, but that's certainly, they wouldn't be able to survive without public support. Mm-hmm. And many of our gardens are highly dependent on earned revenue, as I mentioned previously. And that ranges, it's probably about, we say about 58 to 65% earned revenue is the norm for a public garden today. That's roughly double of a lot of what other cultural arts institutions are dependent on. They're more dependent on what we would consider grants or other things from state and federal than public gardens are. And so that gate admission is one aspect of that. Membership is another aspect of that. But many of our public gardens, about 75% of them, conduct private events such as weddings, but almost just as many do corporate events each year, such as retreats and large meetings, parties or other things. And so they're very event driven as well, to make a unique and memorable moment.
What about at Chadwick, Mary Maloney?
Chadwick Arboretum, we work on our outreach efforts all the time. I mean, increasing programming for audiences of all interests. We're getting a lot more collaborative with our natural partners like entomology and plant pathology to bring their programming into the gardens to connect them in a natural way. It's kind of surprising to me that for so long we've operated independently, but it's just now kind of becoming very engaging for other departments on our campus, and I'm grateful for that. We continue with outreach. For example, this afternoon at 4:00, we're going to have at the plant sale site an auction, and this auction contains plants that are grown around the state by our green industry partners who have allied with us for many, many years to provide donated specimen plant material that we can then put in the auction, and homeowners can install that material in their home gardens. Another thing, too, about plant materials that, you know, there's so many plant materials in those auctions that I would like to keep right here in these gardens to provide a more compelling venue for our own visitors. And with our horticulturists, we, you know, work at increasing that palette of plants. And it's interesting to see people engage with the plant material, see the plant label, and know that they want that for their home garden.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We are broadcasting live from the Chadwick Arboretum annual spring plant sale on the OSU campus. For more information, check out the link on our website at wosu.org/allsides. Let's see. Let's turn to Gloria from Grove City. You're on the air. Hi, Gloria.
Hi, this is Gloria from the Gardens at Gans Farm in Grove City, and I would just like to invite...
Gloria, are you there?
Yes, I am. Wait.
Okay, looks like we lost Gloria. We'll
better,
work on
I had
that.
You on speak.
She was calling in from the Gardens at Gans Farm, and that is another fabulous small pocket garden, really, that it's increasing in interest and visitation every year. And I very much consider the Gardens at Gans Farm as another satellite public garden in this community in Columbus. We really do have a very rich horticultural tradition here that was resurrected following Ameriflora in 1992. Mm-hmm. The cupola at Franklin Park Conservatory was saved. The rose garden at Whetstone Park was regenerated. Mm-hmm. Chadwick Arboretum began to take off. The Master Gardening Program. We became an epicenter here in Franklin County. This past year, we trained a class of 60 new master gardeners. It's, the interest is I'm going to say, exploding.
It's funny because when I was reading yesterday to prepare, I found something, I went on the internet and saw an article. I didn't look at the origin of it, but I started to read it, and they're saying, well, Americans aren't as interested in gardening as people are in other parts of the world, but, and then they went on to describe it, and I'm like, that didn't even make any sense to me. I mean, Americans, I think it's the number one pastime, isn't it?
Well, I would say
it is. Right up there with birds. And
the thing about landscapes are common to everybody who lives on this planet, and that we have an opportunity to sort of expand a landscape in a limited format. For example, we have 60 acres here, and we pack it with woody material, herbaceous material. We have the annual cultivar trials that introduce new selections for the color palette and the hardiness palette of local gardeners here in Columbus. So it's, I don't know, I think we're doing a pretty good job. Like to hear from some callers to see what they think.
And I would dovetail in while we're getting another caller on. That network of plant-related people and the extension of horticulture and the love of plants and gardening just goes everywhere. Part of my service work is to serve as inaugural chair of the National Initiative for Consumer Horticulture. So some of those industry-wide statistics that I'm quoting come directly from NICHE. And you can find them at consumerhort.org. And one of our executive committee members is Pam Bennett, who's the OSU statewide Master Gardener Coordinator, and she leads our efforts in community and health benefits on our executive committee. And she's done just a fabulous job at looking at all the different impacts that plants have on our lives, not just the economic impacts that I can tell you about, but also just, how it really feels to us as our core social benefit and other things, and how it increases obviously the food and nutrition when that's introduced into an area. It increases property values. It increases our sense of social well-being being around plants. It decreases hospital stays. It impacts us where we work. People who are around plants and are around gardening tend to take less sick days. I mean, it's really something that extends through all aspects of our lives. And so I think oftentimes you were mentioning about how there's this sort of stigma that's out there of, oh, people are interacting with plants less. Our data shows drastically to the contrary. And so, in fact, for NICHE, a lot of the stuff shows that 7 out of 10 people garden now, and our vision is to get 9 out of 10 people gardening by 2025.
And, at this plant sale site, among our volunteers who are helping to host this sale, we have volunteers whose specialty is vegetables, and so they're over there. We have others whose interest is in herbs. Their staff area, annuals, perennials.
Vines and shrubs.
But thanks. Yeah, it's all out here. And we have the Master Gardeners and the Chadwick Arboretum volunteers are acting as docents today, helping to guide maybe inexperienced gardeners through the venue here to help them with their selections. And even if you are a very experienced gardener, if you talk to Kathy Krantz or KILO over in the annuals area, you'll have the rock star container for your front porch this summer. So you don't want to miss that opportunity.
This is where I get my mother-in-law's Mother's Day arrangement.
That's always a concern.
Yeah,
thank you, Ann. Oh, Ann, I appreciate that. Yeah.
Okay, Gloria in Grove City, let's take another swat at this. Hi, Gloria.
Hi. I'm sorry. I'm a plant person. I'm not. I don't know phones and computers. So
no, really, me either.
I would personally like to invite everyone in the viewing area to come to our gardens. We are about an acre garden, which is professionally landscaped and award-winning, and we're dedicated to herbs. So anybody, we have a medicinal garden, we have a fragrance garden, a dye garden.
Glory, can I ask you, how did you start your garden? What was the origin?
The garden was started in conjunction with Ameriflora.
Okay.
It's set in about a 180-year-old farmhouse. It was a Gantz family farm. The area was given to Grove City for a passive park. Grove City decided to put in conjunction with Ameriflora, a garden. It was supposed to be a kitchen garden, reminiscent of an 1840s Ohio. But you know what happens when you get a group of people together. It was for our benefit, but we grew to an acre at that point. And it's the gardens are divided into three sections: the garden of yesterday, the garden of today, and the garden of tomorrow. And also,
Wait.
Yes, I'm sorry.
What's the garden of tomorrow like?
It's we just actually put in a new hardscape patio out there because we have a lot of weddings, and it is all herbs that are used for people that live in condos, people that might have apartments and want to grow herbs in containers, people that might want to use herbs for landscape purposes.
Oh, okay.
We kind just
of
put in a,
into the urban landscape, yeah.
Right. We put in a time garden last year, which is different colors of creeping thyme in a pattern.
It's a beautiful garden out there, and I encourage people to visit the gardens at Gantz Farm. I remember in the early days when Barbara Williams was there, and certainly one of our lead volunteers, Marjorie Marlowe, who was very instrumental in helping to get that garden underway. Marjorie's in heaven now, but I think of so many of the volunteers in all of these gardens. Who have helped and continue to help us with our vision, with our funding, with our outreach. It's remarkable to me. Next week, these exhausted volunteers will return to us as we kick off our tour season. They'll be here to receive our tour groups. They'll help us get back to the maintenance of these gardens that we've walked away from for the past 10 days to get this plant sale orchestrated. But it's, we knock loud on the door and we seem to get an immediate and very generous response from a lot of people.
It's something that you said earlier, Casey Sklar, about the fine arts and the performing arts in public gardens. What's the connection there?
I think it's that gardens excite all your senses. And so when you're able to have even more of your senses excited by not only being in a beautiful place, but then getting exposed to what you can hear, what you can see, it just enhances all of those experiences even so much more. And so whether it's seeing a play that's live, I've seen many, many performances of Shakespeare's A Midsummer Night's Dream, for example, but also innovative and contemporary plays that are set, plein air arts exhibits where folks are actually doing art right there in the garden for you to experience, sculpture. There are many sculpture parks, and so much more that are happening, concerts and different things. So.
Yeah, we coordinate with the MFA Fine Arts students at Ohio State University to do their second year installation in our gardens. And I think once the first student found the Arboretum, that now it's well known that this is a venue for artworks, art installations. One of my favorite was a glassblower who put a floating bathtub in the middle of our research lake, and he blew all of these bubbles, glass bubbles, that were in the tub and then actually staged throughout the lake. He had a small child who his duty coming back from graduate school every day was to walk the child around the lake and give his son a bath. And so bath time manifested in his MFA project right in our research lake, and it was a joy. We have a newly funded research project that's coming up. It'll probably be a late summer or early fall installation with a landscape architect, Jake Boswell, who got a grant to he has these floating concrete, almost like hypertufa-like troughs that he'll put plant material in to prevent algae bloom. So it'll be an experiment, an art installation, many things. And those small venues help create a larger picture for us. The engagement continues to increase as people realize that this is a place where they can do their research, show their art, and that it'll be appreciated by a broad audience.
And it's a place where you have young artists who are just getting established in their careers who want to take chances in terms of the visual and performing arts, and then also it's places where you have world-class landscape designs that are occurring and happening. And so from the small glassblower to Dale Chihuly, who's been done exhibits at Franklin Park previously, and I know we'll probably talk more about that when Bruce is here. But you have just wonderful different variations there, but also in the performing arts as well. So there are all different kinds of media that you see, and it just allows you to take all kinds of different chances and other things.
Well, one question I have is, and both of you can talk about this, but there seems to be, as you mentioned, an increase in the number of people interested in becoming master gardeners. And I was wondering, Mary Maloney, if you could talk about what that is, what it involves. And I know that a lot of the people here, there's a 50-hour volunteer requirement to earn your master gardener certificate from the OSU Extension.
That's right. In the first year, I think the second year it reduces to 25 hours. But in truth, most of the master gardener volunteers willingly fulfill the hour requirement quickly in the new year.
What do you learn as a master gardener?
Well, it's a 10-week training. They meet one day a week. They have it's sort of a survey class of plant pathology and entomology, and they're immersed in fruits and vegetables and ornamental nomenclature. And you know, it's a very challenging orientation, but they embrace it very, very willingly. Many of them are retired or getting ready to retire. Some take vacation to participate in the training class, and then they help with our outreach efforts in Franklin County at community gardens, in educational programs. We have the Ask a Master Gardener horticulture info line, and they're here on site. So if you have a question about disease or pests or what's the best tomato to plant in your garden, they can help you with that. And, you know, it's they come from a broad professional background, but their avocation is horticulture. And I'm telling you, their energy is synergistic and monumental. It's unstoppable. And I'm happy to be part of it.
And the Master Gardeners are a nationwide network. They're a tour de force of horticulture that are such wonderful ambassadors. So, you know, you can just go to mastergardener.osu.edu and find where your local county extension office is, or regardless of where you're from and in the viewing and in the listening area today, you can just go and just be more of a part of it. The education that you receive by becoming a master gardener is vast, and so you get to explore that interest, and then it's just such a way for folks to give back. It's just incredible.
I'm kind of in awe of your skill to recall website addresses.
Yeah.
I just want to say that. It's very impressive, and we'll have somebody go back and listen to the program and make sure we post them all on WOSU.org.
Yeah, super, super.
Yep, Mary?
And I just wanted, you know, back to the master gardeners and the volunteers, when they're being interviewed to participate in the program, they're asked a question about how their avocation in horticulture began. And everybody essentially has the same story. Hmm. When I was 4 years old, I put the onion sets out with my dad. When I was seven, I would go to the cutting garden with my Aunt Helen and do the cutting of the for the flowers for the kitchen table. And it's a small integration. It's a gentle way to engage people in the natural world. And for our master gardeners and volunteers, it stayed with them their whole lives, so that now it's manifesting not only in the Master Gardener program, but also in the Certified Naturalist program that we have going here.
Oh, okay.
Great guns.
What's that?
That's it's like master gardening for the wooded areas, or for the natural areas. But they do walks, and they teach about ecosystems and wildflowers, and just the importance of nature on our planet and in their lives. So, you know, we're expanding further.
Mary Maloney, I have to say goodbye to you for now, but thank you so much for joining us.
And this is a pleasure, and I'm so glad that WOSU came to The Ohio State University to celebrate National Public Gardens Day with us.
I wouldn't miss it. That's Mary Maloney. She's director of the OSU Chadwick Arboretum and Learning Gardens here on the OSU campus. It is National Public Gardens Day, and it is also the first of a two-day annual spring plant sale by Chadwick Arboretum and Learning Gardens. We're right here at Lane and right off 315. It's easy to find. Check out the on the website. You'll find a map. WOSU.org/allsides. Go to there. And coming up, we're going to hear from the president and CEO of the Franklin Park Conservatory and Botanical Gardens and executive director of the American Public Gardens Association, Dr. Casey Sklar, will still be with us. So if you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Ann Fisher speaking. This is a special broadcast from the grounds of the Ohio State University Chadwick Arboretum's annual spring plant sale. I think we've been coming here for about 6 years now, six or seven, something like that. For more information about the sale, go to the link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. But I can just guarantee you it's beautiful out here. It's a great way to come and hear the show. So join us out here. If you hear us on the radio and drop by, then stop by and say hi. And I just made that up off the top of my head. So, yeah. It's because I'm inspired by the gardens here, that's for sure. It is National Public Gardens Day, and this morning we're talking public gardens, something Central Ohio has plenty of. Still with us, Executive Director of the American Public Gardens Association, Dr. Casey Sklar. Thanks so much for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure. It's great to be here.
Joining us now is President and CEO of Franklin Park Conservatory and Botanical Gardens, Bruce Harkey. Welcome, Bruce.
Thank you very much, Ann.
You know, someone mentioned earlier the Ameriflora and how that sort of regenerated a lot of interest in gardens and kind of saved something that we take for granted today probably at the Franklin Park.
That's absolutely true. The Palm House, which is one of five glass houses dating back to the Victorian era, was not in great shape in 1990s, and were it not for Ameriflora, I don't think that wonderful palm house would be standing today.
So, and Franklin Park keeps growing. I mean, it's in a fixed place, but it keeps growing. You're using more and more of the acreage.
It's a really unique model. In 1990, the state of Ohio actually established Franklin Park Conservatory as what's known as a joint recreation district. So it's a public-private partnership, and the conservatory is in Franklin Park, and that's an 88-acre park, and the conservatory owns 40 acres. And in the last 25 years, which we celebrated in 2017, there's been tremendous growth with wonderful support from the public and the private sector. We've grown from a relatively small organization in 1993, which could barely survive. Fortunately, Doug Morgan was the first board president, and he really, with a team of dedicated board members and staff, really pulled the conservatory forward. Blooms and Butterflies was a great turning point. And when you fast forward to 2017, we've gone from $1 million organization to well over $10 million.
Which you need to support the operation.
That's absolutely true. The conservatory, as I said, is a public-private partnership, a joint recreation district. And we've been able to increase our earned revenue. Casey mentioned the average for public gardens is around 65%. Mm-hmm. And the conservatory is in that range. And when you think about post-Ameriflora, we were at about 5%. So dramatic growth. But the funding from the city and the county that we have as part of a city-county agreement is very important. That's $1 million a year. But also a tremendous fundraising that accounts for about 30% of our budget. So it's a really nice balance, and you need to think about financial sustainability if you're going to be a successful organization.
You've installed a new recreation play area. There's been a little controversy because it's not open to the public for free.
The place you're referring to is the new Scotts Miracle-Gro Foundation Children's Garden. So the conservatory, if you think about the visitor experience, to this point, it's been pretty much limited to the building.
Right.
And the building is only 3 acres, but only an acre and a half is accessible to the public. And what happens in that building is we welcome 220,000 visitors. We have over 100 full-time staff. We do 500 events and 450 classes. We've served over 50,000 children last year. And so part of what The Conservatory's strategy is in the new era is to develop more experiences for families and children. And I mentioned that we own 40 acres of the park, and only an acre and a half has really been the visitor experience, which for an organization of our size is tiny.
Yeah.
And so with the opening of the Children's Garden and about a 40% increase in attendance and membership, primarily with a lot of families with kids, safety is the most important consideration. So the enclosure around the Children's Garden is critical for the safety of the visitors, but also to grow the visitor experience. And we will now have 10 acres outside of the building in which to do amazing exhibitions and take that horticulture to the next level. What we are going to open with the Children's Garden on May 19th is 75 pink flamingo topiaries in the mallway, which is absolutely incredible. The soil has all been sculpted.
What are they going to be made out of?
They're topiaries. We worked with a guy named Topiary Joe. Okay. Isn't that fun? He used to work with Disney.
Who else?
And we worked with Topiary Joe, and last year we had topiaries that featured endangered animals. Mm-hmm. And one of our staff members worked with a taxidermist to make sure that the eyes were anatomically correct, and all kinds of different plants, and they were placed in the different gardens and biomes. And this year we're going to add baby animals because of the opening of the Children's Garden.
Uh-huh.
But everyone loved the pink flamingos, which are not, of course, endangered. So we decided to put 75 pink flamingo topiaries that are made out of a metal frame. Some of them are standing on one leg, of course. And they have pink begonias as the bodies and then sculpted beaks and eyes. They're pretty amazing, and then they're underplanted with blue flowers, so it looks like they're floating in water.
Oh,
so that's
neat.
Just the beginning of the kind of exhibitions the conservatory will now be able to do with the expanded experience.
And, of course, Bruce, at the Scotts Miracle-Gro Community Foundation Children's Garden, a lot of that emphasis is on the plants and animals and biomes of Ohio, right?
It is. It's a celebration of the Ohio landscape, and the genesis of this project was based on a lot of research with our community, and they said we want more experiences for families and children. And I think we all know that children spend so much time on their phones, and nature deficit disorder is a real thing where kids are feeling disconnected from nature. And as Casey mentioned, we have fewer young people going into the field, and that's something we are very concerned about. And like many of the young visitors who will come to the conservatory, as a child, I remember being 8, 9 years old and going to Niagara Falls on a family vacation, and my parents knew I loved gardening. I gardened with them, and we stopped at the School of Horticulture in Niagara Falls, and that was the moment I decided to go into horticulture. And so I am so excited about the opportunity to connect young people with this natural space, which includes a creek that looks like Hocking Hills, a canopy walk with a hammock lounge, a rainbow garden. You know, the kids loved, we did all kinds of focus groups, kids love climbing, they love rainbows, and they love water. And
well, are there any unicorns?
No unicorns. There's a cardinal, because that's the state bird of Ohio.
Right. The
there's a
salamander.
Spotted salamander, which is the amphibian for the state of Ohio. But the parents love safety and dry kids, and so we went with what the kids wanted.
Yeah. There must be other amazing ideas out there like this all over the place now.
Yeah,
and people can visit them if they join something like Franklin Park Conservatory or Chadwick Arboretum.
Absolutely. Yeah, there are many children's gardens located throughout the country. They have several different commonalities. One of them is the inclusion of water and the ability to get wet and the ability to get muddy. We have gardens throughout the country that host Mud Day, Cat Video Day. I mean, the innovation just never ceases. And it's fantastic. And what you're able to do and integrate on a more thoughtful level at the Scotts Miracle-Gro Foundation Community Children's Garden is really, it's incredibly deep as well, to learn more about the plants of Ohio, the different ecology of Ohio, to interact with and learn more about pollinators and other wildlife. Mm-hmm. It's incredible. So.
Scotts is a big Central Ohio corporate presence, but I mean, and they've been becoming more and more involved in lots of things in the area over the last 20 or 30 years. Is corporate
sponsorship an important part of funding for these kinds of ventures? Casey
Yeah,
Sklar?
Absolutely. I think what you need is you need right-minded corporations to really understand the true impacts. If we're really going to try to promote careers in horticulture and try to get people involved, you need to make that intimate connection. And so many of our different institutions have different partnerships with corporate entities, and they range everything from healthcare to banking and finance to really just about anything you can imagine, to manufacturing, all the way through. And so this is just one of many, many mm-hmm. examples that I can cite, even as vast as hotel chains. So, for example, to help promote tourism to right places, we have a hotel provider that we work with who specializes in having chefs at their resorts make sure that they raise the food that are grown at different things. And so there's a lot of alignment in the corporate campus of the future, and how the corporate campus of the future really becomes an attraction for potential employees. And so why would you go to work in a cubicle when you could go to work at a campus, a corporate campus that's almost like a public garden in every way?
Yeah. Well, I think the other part of the corporate support, so we have so many wonderful corporations in Central Ohio, and you know, in addition to Scott's, Nationwide has been a great supporter of the conservatory. My former employer, Honda of America, has been involved in L Brands, and they've all been very generous in their contributions to support the children's garden that will open on May 19th. And in the conversations with these corporations, they want to make sure that Central Ohio continues to develop these amazing cultural and educational experiences, so that when they're trying to attract employees to their companies, they want to stay in Ohio. I moved here in 1992 thinking I'd be here for 2 years, and here it is, 2018. So I always describe Columbus as the Hotel California. You can check in, but you can never leave. And in the conversations with those corporations, they're aligned with the priorities of the conservatory, which is to make sure that children all across Central Ohio have access to this amazing new experience. And we are committed to an access plan for the children's garden. We're going to give away 5,000 free tickets through our community partners. We're welcoming 1,000 Columbus Recreation and Parks campers for free this summer to make sure that they can be involved in the children's garden.
Like overnights?
Not overnights.
Okay.
We do Girl Scout sleepovers in the Wells Barn, but just for the day campers to come in for day trips, and then we work with city schools as well. So that will continue to grow. The Columbus Foundation did something called the Big Table, which was a way to get the community to get together to have conversations. And what I said to Doug Kreidler is, I want to create the little table in the children's garden, so that children from all walks of life that represent the diversity of our community, they can come together and they can build a bright future for our community as well.
You mentioned the Wells Barn, and another big movement that I think has influenced a lot of interest in public gardens and gardening in general is the whole farm to table, eating locally and that kind of a thing. Am I wrong?
Not at all, actually. The ability to connect people with food and where their food comes from is vast, and we see that as a really strong driver. For example, in the Wells Barn, there's a demonstration kitchen in order to show people how to accurately prepare food. But you know, just to the north of us up in Toledo, Ohio, the movement that they're doing at Toledo Botanic Garden, which is celebrating National Public Gardens Day for the first time this year.
Oh, great.
So those of you in the northern area can go up and check that out. But that idea to solve food injustice problems in communities and rectify and provide, you know, essentially nourishment to food desert communities is out there, and it's incredible. And it extends to some projects that we're working on right now in regard to what we call crop wild relatives. And it being so close to Mother's Day and you talking about your mother-in-law, it's not that kind of wild relative. It's a different sort of crop wild relative. It's the ancestors of where our plants come from. And they can really serve as the reservoir to help forestall the next Irish potato famine and other things. And we find that those crop wild relatives, where you might think that they're in far-off countries and far-off lands, the United States is the third most abundant for crop wild relatives. And the epicenter of them is here in the upper Midwest and the Northeast region.
All right. Well, Dr. Casey Sklar, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Ann.
Dr. Casey Sklar is the Executive Director of the American Public Gardens Association. He's a special guest today, came here to visit the gardens in Central Ohio. Bruce Harkey, President and CEO of Franklin Park Conservatory and Botanical Gardens, thanks to you as well. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Remember, it is Public Garden, National Public Gardens Day. It's a 2018 annual Chadwick Arboretum plant sale as well. For more information, visit the link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides and come and visit us down here on the OSU campus at the sale. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.